A prime defender gains no higher honor than winning a desperate attack. Join me as we slay our foes.
I was filled with questions in the endless second that followed his instructions. Who were these alien soldiers? Why was I among them? Why were dinosaurs eating that fallen man? And why the hell would someone calling himself Prime Defender want to attack? The feathery dinos congregated around the downed man in white. Several of them used giant hooked claws on their feet to tear into the guy's flesh. Then they drilled their snouts into the fresh spray of blood. There was nothing anyone could do for him. I think I knew it the moment he stumbled out of the jungle. It was fight or flight for real. On an alien world. With an alien ally. Against fucking dinosaurs. I followed Herakula for a few insane steps toward the pack of dinos, but we both stopped when one of the new feathered monsters reoriented on us, sniffed the air, and then ran toward us. We were ready to defend ourselves while the lone dino ran our way, but I think it surprised us both when it jumped almost as high as the big man's head. He managed to jab his spear with impressive speed and made pretty solid contact with his attacker. The spear went into the exposed belly of the green-feathered raptor, but the wood also cracked in two from the impact. The dino crashed into Herakula and ripped into his flesh with those nasty toe hooks. The big shark man growled, and the pair fell to the ground locked in mortal combat. As they flailed, the dinosaur's long tail whipped into me and sent me flying backward. I felt the air leave my lungs when my back smacked against the sand. I pushed up to my feet, glanced up the beach, and saw two more raptors arrive near the dead man in white. They hovered there a moment, as if deciding what to eat, then sprinted over toward Herakula. Not fucking good! I exhaled with fear as the raptors plowed across the sand toward my ally. The shark man traded blows with the killing machine as he tried to get to his feet. I really wanted to help him, but by the time I grabbed my spear, Herakula had taken a huge gash to the side of his face from one of those hooked claws. He dealt his own damage. One of the dino's arms was severed at the wrist, and the beast was flopping around on the sand while it screeched. Herakula tried to bite the dinosaur on the other arm, but the giant man wasn't as agile as his opponent, and the injured raptor dashed away with a squawk. Then the raptor turned and rushed the big warrior again as the two other feathered fuckers arrived to the fight.
For Mistress Iridine!
The shark man shouted a second before the raptors leapt onto him. Herakula managed to stay upright and on one knee, but the remainder of his spear was now a harmless stick. He tried to jam the stub of the spear into one of the jumping dinosaurs, but not even the powerful warrior could force it through the creature's tough, feathery skin. The jaws of the dinos never stopped opening and closing, and the hooked claws never stopped ripping. Every piece of exposed flesh was shredded, including those strange hoses. Some were damaged and hissed with purple steam. Others tore open and splashed that purple liquid from side to side. I cringed when one of the dinos planted its jaws right across the giant's eyes. I pointed my spear, ready to do my best with it, even though I'd never so much as held one before. But there were now three raptor dinosaurs within 10 feet of me, and my arms started to shake. The first dinosaur took a pause from ripping into Herakula's face, and it hung its head low so it could hiss at me. Purple sludge dripped from its fangs and claws. It was blood from the alien shark man, and I knew I was too late to save the guy. Fuck me, I muttered. Time to get out of here. I was already too scared to move, but that condition was made worse when the hissing bastard took a step my way. I stood frozen as if its hostile eyes alone had stopped me. I willed myself to disappear. I hoped to convince it I wasn't a threat. Attacking it with my spear would be a threat. Running would be a threat. My only chance was to do nothing. It wasn't cowardice to use the only useful weapon left in my arsenal, my brain. And I prayed the dino and its friends had enough, meat to not want to bother with me. The seconds ticked by, but still it stared at me. I avoided looking at its eyes, thinking my gaze might antagonize it, because lots of animals took that as a challenge to their dominance. I took a step back and thanked every god in the universe for restoring my movement. The dino seemed to tense, but then relaxed a moment later, so I took another slow step. It dropped its head so it was almost touching the trembling shark man's skull. The terrible wound was not a simulation or Hollywood fakery. It was the real shit. This was really happening. I was on an alien world with a bunch of dinosaurs. After a few more steps, the blood-drenched raptor went back to munch on the shark soldier with its two friends.
Sorry, Heracula.
I only knew you for a moment, but you seemed like a good dude. Hope you found glory. I kept backtracking until I reached the line of trees. The small flock of feathered dinosaurs almost seemed happy as they clawed around in their new treasures. It sickened me to watch, but I couldn't look away until I was positive I was out of their field of view. When I was about a second away from calling it good, someone tapped me on the shoulders.
Fuck! Dude! Don't do that!
I gasped as I saw the alien monkey-looking man.
Sorry. We've got to get out of here.
Sergeant Kelg sweated profusely, just like me. The heat was unbearable, yes, but I knew part of my perspiration came from fear of having our faces clawed off at any moment.
I think you're right. That armored tank of a guy got one swing with one of these chunky spears, and he was dead.
I motioned to the spears we held in our hands. Kelg nodded, but then his eyes opened wide with surprise, and I realized he was actually looking behind me. I turned and saw at least two of the feathered dinos trotting toward us.
Shit, shit, shit,
I said with a kickstart to my heart rate once more. I did okay in sports. I could kick a soccer ball, somewhat throw a football, swim a lap or two, but I'd never been a great runner. If I had to pick between going for a long run or drilling holes in my fingernails, I'd have plugged in the drill. Running just never appealed to me. Yet, there's no greater motivator than death to get one foot moving in front of the other. My flight response was already at redline, so I sprinted at a respectable clip through the shaded sandy area where the beach met the jungle. I imagined those claws and teeth were right behind me the whole way. I surprised myself by passing the sergeant almost immediately. My legs seemed to work faster than his, and his face was covered with sweat in moments.
"Stay to cover!"
he commanded as I got 10 yards or so ahead of him. I would never even think of leaving a man behind, same as I would never leave injured animals out in the weather. It just wasn't in my vocabulary. But he couldn't know my sense of honor. We ran for a few more minutes, and every so often he would repeat his order as if I'd forget it.
I'm not gonna leave you,
I said while breathing heavily. I tried to look behind us, but I didn't see our pursuers. I did hear their unusual chirps, though, and it was enough to convince me that we couldn't slow down any. Maybe we could run for the ocean. Could dinosaurs swim? Did sharks exist in this area? I tried to think it through, but the ocean was a great unknown for me that was probably filled with all sorts of crazy monsters. At least on land I could see the threats. The area along the edge of the beach was thinned out by the wind and wave action of the water. I motioned so he would run deeper into the thicker part of the jungle, away from the sand. I knew it would be slower going, but I'd seen those dinos move. We'd never outrun them on the open ground if they homed in on us.
Good idea,
the sergeant replied. He wasn't nearly as winded as me, and I wondered if he was sandbagging his run. The jungle increased in density, as if someone had planted it in a long wall just off the beach. Vines and ivy exploded all around us, and we became snared in it as if it was a net.
Maybe they'll get stuck through here too,
Kelg wondered aloud.
I wouldn't count on it.
It was all I had to offer. It was exhausting squirming through the knots of ivy, but it seemed to thin out after a few minutes.
Oh, thank the holy waters,
Kelg said in a quiet voice.
We've got something between them and us.
Not far beyond the wall of ivy, we entered a sprawling field of flat black rocks, like an asphalt parking lot broken apart by age. There were still tall trees and a high canopy around us, but the rocks seemed to resist the weeds and dense undergrowth of the surrounding jungle. We sped up the pace by bounding from rock to rock, and I noticed Kelg pick up a bit of distance on me. He seemed to have legs made more for leaping than running. The chirping noises refused to go away, and we continued to run across the blacktop until Kelg suddenly stopped ahead of me. He held up his hand and raised two of his fingers in a gesture undoubtedly part of his military training.
Quick, hide here in this crack!
He dropped his arm right next to him and indicated where I should go. I hopped over and saw the problem right away.
There's only room for one, I whispered. I could lay down end to end in the crack, and the dinosaur would have to walk right on top of me to see me. I saw where he was going with it.
Trust me, I have a plan, he replied.
I didn't have time to think about it. Kelg was the military tactician. I expected his plan would be better than anything I could devise on the fly. I slid into the long crack and held my breath while on my front side. I tried to forestall the waves of fear pulsing through my muscles. My heart was trying to break free of my chest so it could run away, and my lungs couldn't seem to get air fast enough. The sergeant put his hand over his closed mouth in what had to mean stay quiet, as if I was thinking about shouting. I nodded, and he ran away from my hidey hole. He didn't go far. I heard him grunt several times, and I almost popped my head up to see what he was doing. He wasn't screaming, so I didn't think the dinos had found him. I lay in that crack for a few minutes before I heard the chirping of the raptors from somewhere very close. All plans of leaving the nook to see what Kelg was working on vanished from my mind, and I tried to burrow myself into the rock. Another chirp. Super close by. I willed myself to become one with the rock. And then, impossibly loud, Sergeant Kelg started to laugh.
I'm sorry, friend. You've got a warrior's heart, if not his skill. I will note your contribution in my mission report.
In my head, I yelled at him to be quiet, but it was only after I absorbed the words that I realized he was talking to me.
I've never failed a mission. Today my goal is to stay alive. Your death will serve that end. So, if you'll do me a favor and pop your head up, the creatures can feast upon you, and I can slip away unnoticed, as you did with Big Ugly. My phalanx will hone in on my beacon and rescue me from this jungle world. Until then, all I have to do is find somewhere safe and stay alive.
A branch or something fell close to my hiding place.
It's nothing personal. I wish I could have seen Lacey's home. You sincerely seem to miss it, but the code of the first level protector demands I survive at all costs.
Another big piece of wood landed next to me and spun near the crack. If that didn't get the dino's attention, nothing would.
It's right next to you. Just stick your head up, and we can get this over with.
His chuffing laugh was now toxic to me. I wanted to tell this snot-nosed motherfucker where he could shove his stick, but I hadn't been found yet. I gripped my spear, ready for a final battle, and I hoped I could get that one hit like Heracula had landed.
It's a good thing you can't climb, you stupid feather lizard, because I...
There was a moment of silence. I heard him say a word that might have been Big Plopper. Then Sergeant Kelg screamed. His voice suggested he was falling, and a moment later I heard a loud impact confirming my belief.
Help me!
The alien man croaked, and I did peek out the lip of the crevice. The dinosaurs were right there, just as he'd said. One of them must have climbed to his low perch and pulled him down. I cringed as I heard claws click on the rocks. And then I stifled my fear when I heard teeth tear into the other man's flesh. It was all eerily similar to the last moments of the other two alien soldiers. Now they'd gotten three of us. I peeked my head over the rock and was almost slapped by a dinosaur tail. It only took one quick glance to see Kelg's body. His fiery orange eyes were lifeless and stared right at me. Heracula would definitely say the asshole sergeant failed to find glory in his last seconds. Kelg's head rocked from side to side as the hungry predators took bites from the exposed torso of their prize. Blood spattered across the rocks, and the dinosaurs let out noises that sounded like Southern California dove hoots. They seemed occupied with the corpse of Kelg, but I knew they would find me hiding right next to them as soon as they were done feasting. I thought through my options, and decided that my only hope was putting as much distance as I could between myself and the two feathery raptors. There was nothing to be gained by waiting, so I hopped up out of my hole, tiptoed for a few moments, and then ran for it. The raptors had their back to me, but I had no idea if they'd turn around to give chase. I blazed across the remainder of the fake blacktop area, sure they were going to strike me down at any moment. It felt like an eternity, but a minute later I'd returned to the mercifully dense jungle. Somewhere behind me, the raptors gorged on the other man's body. I prayed that they wouldn't follow me. Chapter 3. I ran for a long time before my adrenaline finally burned off. I was left wheezing from exertion at the edge of a small and surprisingly happy-looking creek. My brain begged me to keep going, but my lungs, heart, and legs told my brain to fuck off. They were the ones doing all the work. I dropped my spear, hunched over my knees, and forced myself to take a break. The forest was alive with buzzing, squeaking, howling, and tweeting, but the one sound I feared inside the larger symphony of noise was nowhere to be found. The distinct chirping of those feathery raptors had been left far behind. The creek tumbled over little rocky ledges from somewhere above, and continued down pretty much in the direction I'd come from. The undergrowth was so thick I could only see the 6 or 8 feet to the opposite bank, and maybe 50 yards in either direction. The sweat of running, combined with the relentless humidity of the jungle, made my shirt and pants cling to me as if they were afraid of the dinosaurs, too. A soak in the creek and a long, cool drink of that water were exactly what I needed. But Beatrice's screechy voice cautioned me.
"Are you fucking stupid, kid? Didn't they teach you nothing at that fancy college? You can't drink water on the ground. It's got cow shit in it."
She never listened to me when I tried to explain my community college was anything but fancy. But more to the point, she never explained where all these cows were coming from and why they chose random streams as their toilets. I'd only seen a few cows in all my years at Mom and Dad's clinic, and those were from wealthy people's hobby farms. I stared at the playful splashing of the clear water as it entered a little pool nearby. But cows and their bathroom habits were in my head now.
"Damn you, Beatrice," I whispered.
There undoubtedly were bacteria and parasites in the water, and it was probably in my best interest not to drink it. As a compromise, I set my Outback hat on a rock and dunked my head in the creek to cool off. It was surprisingly warm, like bathtub water. Still, it was cooler than my skin, and I did my best to just enjoy the refreshing feel. I tried to look at my reflection in the water, but there were too many ripples across the surface of the creek. Maybe my face or eyes held some clue about what was happening to me, but something howled from the jungle downstream and cut off any thoughts of such research. I grabbed my hat, slapped it on with a wet smack, and started up the stream bed. It was a sort of road through the impenetrable jungle. There were fewer tangles of vines and brush to hop through, and it instantly became a kind of landmark on my mental map. My dad was one of those guys who always liked to know where he was going. I did as well, but I had no way of knowing the best direction to go in this crazy alien world. As I stumbled up the creek, I thought of everything but my parents and my missed visit with them. Exhaustion made that a lot easier. Had I really been abducted by aliens and dropped on this world? Why? And why me? A lifetime of playing video games, reading comic books, and watching videos of people playing video games and talking about comics should have given me some insight on what was happening to me, but it didn't. It wasn't virtual reality. That had been grasping at straws from the beginning. It isn't like there's a simulation where your whole body can be inside the fake world. VR was crazy, but the idea of being captured by aliens seemed even more insane. A coma? A disease? Terrorist attack? Was there some kind of threat reported on the television I'd missed? I never paid attention to the news. Maybe it was time travel. I chewed on that as I hopped up on a big rock next to the flowing water of the creek. I'd been walking for many minutes and was getting higher on the hillside, but I still couldn't see anything below me besides more jungle. Maybe if I could see more of my surroundings, I could figure things out. But time travel did make some sense. It would explain the dinosaurs, certainly. And the jungle had big ferns and funny-looking trees I didn't remember ever seeing in the L.A. suburbs or the hills above them. And maybe the beach was actually Venice from 65 million years ago. However, it didn't explain the three strange-looking soldier aliens, or the second moon. So I threw out the time travel idea and went back to what I'd first thought. The only other explanation was that I'd been abducted by aliens and deposited here. I wasn't ready to declare case closed, but I still didn't know the who, what, where, and whys of the situation. I kicked around ideas about my abductors, but I was too tired to concentrate on them further. I needed to get to somewhere safe first, and then I could collect my thoughts and try to puzzle through my predicament. Time had no meaning as I walked. I wore a watch on my wrist, but for the 100th time I checked it to confirm that the LCD numbers were still missing. It was quite old, so it wasn't a huge shock the thing was dead. Watches always went out at the wrong time. I guess I'd been slogging through the creek for an hour when I thought I heard those chirping monsters that killed Kelg. They cut through the ambient noise of the loud jungle like a scythe, and my heart jumped into my throat. In moments, I was fast walking up the debris and rock-strewn little channel, but insta-stopped when a gigantic spider web wrapped around my face like a death mask. Motion caught my eye to my left. A dinner plate-sized blackened yellow spider hopped along its web to check me out. Its body was maybe twice the size of my thumb, but the long legs could probably wrap completely around my hand. And its two fangs had to be twice as lethal if this was the dinosaur age. I didn't hate spiders like lots of people did, but I still yelped and flung myself backward, slipping and falling on the wet rocks. The spider hovered at the edge of the rip I'd caused in its home, and we both regarded each other. The web was a gigantic snare crossing the entire width of the creek. A 10-foot circle of perfect golden silk glowed in the sunlight. I scrambled to my feet and ran my fingers over my face, neck, and ears in a moment of panic. I had an irrational urge to swing my spear and tear the whole web down. But it passed once I'd brushed the webbing off my face. The spider still sat there watching me. Ugh. It was gross for sure, but less so knowing the spider wasn't crawling through my hair or down my shirt. Sorry, friend, just passing through. Did spiders live in the time of dinosaurs? I couldn't remember learning about them in my fancy college, but I figured the lesson was right in front of me. At least one did. I trudged through the weedy undergrowth around the web and got back to the creek once I was clear. The spider still hadn't moved, and it looked even bigger seeing it from its underside. I slipped and fell again, moments after turning my back upstream, but I got to my feet as fast as I could. The water called to me as fervently as had Lacey's bikini top, but I fought to keep my eyes from drinking from that dangerous well. Sometime later, I reached a small, mostly flat clearing of tall ferns next to the creek. It looked like an excellent place to collapse and rest, but the second I stepped into the greenery, an explosion of blue feathers surrounded me. Fuck! I stumbled again, but kept my feet as numerous small bird-like animals came out of the grass. Somehow they'd stayed hidden until I walked up to them. They were about as tall as my work boot, vibrant blue like bluebirds, but shaped more like roadrunners. They ran and hopped and cackled loudly as they scattered. Their long blue tails flashed a white underside to them as they scurried away. I laughed when I saw they were harmless. It was more of a maniacal giggle, given my extreme thirst. These were the first animals I'd seen since arriving that didn't appear to want to eat me.
Beep beep,
I said, while thinking of the Roadrunner cartoons, which triggered more laughter. I waved my hand in their direction to further chase off the stragglers, then took a seat at the grassy edge nearest the water. Chirps or no chirps in the distance, I had to take a break. Once I was off my feet, I used my hat to fan myself, and soon got lost in daydreaming and mindless staring. I may have drifted off, or just zoned out, until my extreme thirst snapped me back to reality. The sun was definitely getting dimmer compared to earlier in the day, so I estimated lots of time slipped by since I sat down. Nice. Kill yourself by daydreaming, I said. But I didn't bother to answer myself. My hat must have slipped from my fingers at some point, and I reached down to grab it. But one of the little bird things had hopped inside and squatted there like it was a nest. I gave it a stern look. Seriously? You have the whole jungle, and you have to sit there? It cocked its head like it was listening to me while those beady black eyes seemingly comprehended my words. It was a very pretty animal, but I tipped my hat to dump it out. Shoo! Go play with your friends. I'm doing serious stuff here, I said to the little dinosaur as I flailed my hat at it. Then I checked it for bird poop before I put it on. The little blue-feathered bird was still next to me, and he gave a little chirp when I stood. "Can't take a hint, huh?" I asked, and he turned his head sideways like a confused dog. I waved my arms and made my best impression of a Sasquatch, and the little guy turned to flee into the thick forest. I chuckled as he disappeared into the brush. "Adios," I said quietly, and then got moving. Without thinking, I walked downstream for a full minute before I remembered I was supposed to be going up to the top of the hill so I could get my bearing. I sighed heavily. But before I turned back around, I saw something run across the creek down below. It was a yellow and black streak, but it wasn't that big spider. It was about human-sized, and clambered across the big rocks on all fours. By the time I'd focused my eyes on the shape, it had disappeared, and I wondered if the movement had been a dehydration illusion. I tilted my head back as I leaned against my spear and looked at the blue sky peeking through the high jungle canopy.
"Does everything want to kill me here?"
I whispered to the heavens. The animal I saw looked like a cheetah, but that was impossible. I studied cats a lot, including the big cats, and not just in college but afterward too because I was intrigued by them. My parents' clinic often dealt in exotic pets and the like. Cats most definitely did not exist at the same time as dinosaurs. I turned around and trotted up the creek as best I could. In the whole universe of things that could kill me in the age of dinosaurs, a cheetah almost didn't register on the threat matrix. I had to treat it just like those chirping dinos and continue to run away. I made it a good ways up the creek before I was sure the day was ending. Without my watch, there was no way of knowing how to gauge time. But I was pretty sure the Earth would have had the same day and night cycles in the past. It was evening now, but the jungle was still oppressively hot, and my vision swam like the water of the creek near where I walked. Some snippet of one of my lessons, or maybe a training video, reminded me that some animals tended to get active in the evening and at night. I felt like I'd been wrung out and stretched thin on a clothesline already, but the real action of the day was possibly still ahead of me. I'd never survive a night out in the open, so I had to find cover. I scanned in all directions and saw nothing but trees, vines, ferns, and the occasional wet rock. I wished I'd watched all those survival shows, because I probably would have known exactly what I should have been doing at that moment. The only direction somewhat safe was up. I wet my lips with a little moisture left in my mouth as I considered the energy required to climb a tree. Then I glanced longingly at the flowing water next to me.
"Cow shit!"
Beatrice's voice reminded me. I shook my head and debated drinking again. I couldn't recall a time when I had ever been thirstier, but a drink from the creek now might mean a more painful death in a day when the parasites ripped through my stomach. I searched for a few minutes before finding the tree I needed. Thick vines had grown with the tree, and it almost looked like a barbershop swirl of growth was wrapped around it. I gave one last look to the creek, almost changed my mind about drinking, and then dug my fingers into the vines. The 50-foot climb wasn't as bad as I feared. My arms weren't nearly as tired as my legs, and I managed to get well into the highest branches before I judged I was high enough to avoid any trouble from below. Kel got himself killed because he chose too low a branch. Or so I hoped. If dinosaurs could climb to the tops of every tree, I was a dead man. I tried to stay on my task, but I noticed some small windows of open air where I could see beyond my immediate patch of jungle hell. I reached one that was more open than the others, and I glanced through the leaves with the small shred of hope I'd see a city or maybe a magic portal ready to take me back home.
"I'll be damned," I said through clenched teeth.
My improved eyes made it easy to see the edge of the ocean on the horizon. There in front of me was a distant island, well beyond the beach where I'd first arrived. I hope I'm looking at Catalina Island. The distant island was sometimes visible from the hill country above Los Angeles. Though my view is hampered by leaves and a strangely jungle-like environment, it sure looked like it was about the same distance from shore. If that was Catalina, then maybe I'd been sent back in time instead of taken to some alien world. I was pretty sure it was Catalina. Mostly sure. But then I noticed that the Santa Monica Mountains weren't where I thought they should be. Maybe I'd been teleported more south? The rain should have been on the north side of the coast, but the land there looked flat. I sat back against the trunk of the tree while straddling the branch. Nope. There was no question anymore. Maybe there should have never been. Even though the sun was setting beyond the ocean to the west, I wasn't back home. I was on another world for sure. A distant roar resonated in my chest, even though it had to be miles away. A few return calls came from another direction. I could only imagine what dinosaurs were making that racket, or what they were saying. Fresh meat, I said, thinking of myself and my dead companions. I'd left my spear safely stowed on a branch lower to the ground. It became too tedious to climb with it, since it tended to get caught up in the branches. However, I did have my hat. I took it off, and intended to hang it from a little knob in the bark so I could stay cool. I reached for it. I fell. I don't know how it happened. I just leaned over to hook the loop of my hat to that spot, and in the following second, I was sprawled over the next branch 5 feet below me. It punched all the air from my lungs, and I hung there for half a minute before I could breathe again. I was 4 or 5 stories off the ground, and I'd almost killed myself because of a hat. But it was my dad's old hat. I could think of a couple movies where people slept in trees, but I suddenly wanted nothing to do with one. Even if I somehow secured myself, I was sure I would manage to tumble out if or when I fell asleep. I stood on the branch, sheepishly grabbed my hat, and began back down the vines. I had plenty of time to consider where I would go next. The only somewhat safe spot would be a cave of some kind. That's what I needed to find before nightfall. The creek was still the fastest way to travel through the dense foliage, so I went immediately for the water. My thirst was so intense, I almost broke down and ignored the rules of drinking. It occurred to me that there probably weren't any cows up the creek, but there were almost certainly dinosaurs. In my dreary haze, I imagined microscopic dinosaurs chomping at me from inside drops of water. Item 10 million on the cause of death list. But I was going to have to either find a way out of this place or figure out how to boil some water by tomorrow. I supposed I was still thinking that I would get rescued, or that someone would tell me this was nothing more than an elaborate joke. Even though I knew this was real, and I was stuck on this alien planet. In those minutes before darkness fell, I knew I heard those chirps. Not close, but not far either. They were out there. And I felt, rather than saw, the eyes of that cheetah on me. It really seemed like it was stalking me, too. I willed it to go fight the dinosaurs. Or maybe it was a paranoid fright, or maybe I didn't care anymore. I was so tired and thirsty. Shoot, cheetah! I giggled softly. I was babbling to myself, and I knew that it was the side effect of my dehydration. I was going to have to drink from the creek tomorrow. The rainforest really came alive as the darkness draped itself over the already hostile jungle. Rather than soothe, it seemed to aggravate the chaos. I tripped over giant centipedes. I ran around martial lines of peanut-sized ants, and all manner of oversized insects crawled on the edges of my tunnel vision. Things jumped through the trees. Feet clomped through the nearby brush. The chatter of bigger beasts struck the jungle near and far, like thunder and lightning in a pop-up thunderstorm. And then I found what I was looking for. A little to the left of the creek, and slightly uphill, there was a black tunnel drilled into a rough patch of reddish soil. If I was back home, I might think a badger or fox had made it. A really big badger or fox. Who knows? Maybe those were here too. More threats to avoid. But it was almost the right size for me. I stuck my spear in there and didn't make contact with a living creature. Bingo! I exclaimed as quietly as I could. I used my spear to clear away the edges and made it just wide enough for me to slither inside on my belly. It was dry on the inside, and the previous owner had cleared out a little burrow that was only a bit wider than my body. It was like being zipped into a dirt sleeping bag and forced to share it with worms and other slithering bugs. It took me about 60 seconds to situate myself how I wanted, so I had my thick boots at the opening. I figured they'd be the least appetizing part of me if something found me and wanted a taste. When I finished excavating, I realized it wasn't comfortable at all. But I didn't care. I fell asleep the instant I stopped moving. I had terrible dreams. I often did. I ran from police sirens, but they always found me. Sometimes I was caught at the doorstep of my parents' home. Sometimes it was in their clinic. A few times it was at the scene of their car wreck, but they always caught me. This time they caught me by biting my leg.
What the fuck?
I shouted. I was trapped in a coffin. No, I was in a hole in the ground, not a grave. Something nipped at my leg just above the leather upper of my boot, and I screeched as I kicked my feet. I tried to wiggle my way out of my protective hole, got turned around, found my spear, and then sprang out of the hole with a weapon in my hands. It was daylight again, and I gasped with relief when I saw that my attacker was just one of those little blue roadrunner birds. It cocked its head in exactly the same way as the one that had been in my hat. I must have looked crazy, pointing my spear at it, but I took a moment to study my surroundings. The jungle was back to its normal level of background noise, and I guess the sun was pretty much above me again. I'd slept all night, and well into the next day.
You following me?
I spoke quietly because I was sure there were bigger threats just beyond earshot. It simply waited there with its head all funny. It really did look like a roadrunner, or even one of those chocobo birds from the video games. It even stood like one. It was as if the long feathery tail acted as a counterbalance to its body and bird-like head.
So what the hell are you?
As an animal lover, I like to encounter new ones. You'd think working at an animal clinic would help with that, and it did a little, but 99% of our cases were dogs and cats. There weren't a lot of pet owners willing to pony up money to care for their exotic tree frogs or imported lizards, and interesting birds were just as rare. Most were macaws or parakeets. This little guy defied classification. It had the head of a bird, tiny front arms and talons attached to the edges of small wings, vicious-looking claws on its feet, the long feathery tail of a roadrunner, and its plumage was blue like a bluebird. Judging by the small wings, I didn't think it could fly, but I wasn't sure if a real roadrunner could either. Come to think of it, the blue bird was a pint-sized version of the Velociraptor, which made me recoil a bit, even though he looked overly friendly.
Are you gonna decide to eat me?
I chuckled at it. My blue friend looked at me with curiosity. Then it raised its little wings, spun on its heels, and ran into the jungle. Whatever you are, you're weird. The instant that distraction disappeared, I remembered I was parched. I couldn't even wet my lips anymore, and they felt like sandpaper.
Beatrice, I have to do it.
I looked at the flowing water. I was very unsteady walking the few feet to the edge of the creek, but I was so close. I stood on a flat rock right at the water's edge.
I'm gonna do it,
I said again, since my voice had come out as a whisper the first time. I felt eyes on me once again, and I froze there and surveyed the jungle as best I could from on top that rock. Distant roars and barking chirps suddenly seemed remote threats. Whatever was watching me was very close. I don't know how far I went the previous night, but the downstream side was particularly dense with trees. Upstream was much more open, so that's where I wanted to go. Instead of indulging my urge to drink, I forced my way toward the brighter open area up the creek. As I got near, I almost cheered when I saw what looked like a clearing and waterfall above me. I had to scale a small rocky cliffside next to the tumbling waterfall. When I popped my head over the top edge, I almost cried with joy. It was a large pond, probably the size of a couple of football fields put next to each other. And most importantly, it looked blue, clear, undisturbed, and safe. The water looked heavenly. Nearest to me were some reeds and big lily pads, but the rest of the lake was pretty open and clear. Animals had long ago crushed and destroyed all vegetation on the outer rim of the lake, a sign this was a well-used watering hole. I got to my feet and experienced a head rush.
Think before you drink.
Beatrice's voice was calm but distant.
Screw you, Beatrice. I'm drinking,
I replied as I took a hesitant step toward the water. I looked over the cliff back into the dark jungle. The feeling of being watched was with me again, but being in the open air of the lake gave me a new sense of security. I'd at least see the threat coming, because there were no trees along the shore. I walked through some of the reeds near where the lake met the waterfall, but was soon clear of any obstructions between me and open water. A fist-sized mosquito-looking creature buzzed past me and was then followed by something that looked like a dragonfly. The bloodsucker gave me one more idea for a potential cause of death. Malaria. I shut it out. My entire being was focused on the water. I knew enough not to jump in. I probably wouldn't have done that even back at home. I always had an aversion to deep water. Probably from playing too many video games or watching horror movies. There's always something lurking below, even in suburban storm ponds. I got on my knees, threw aside my hat and spear, and looked at the water gently lapping against the bank below me. Here goes nothing. I stuck my head all the way in. When I came back up, I wiped my face, savoring the relative coolness of the sun-warmed water. Then I got down to the serious business of drinking. I did think of cows and dinosaurs and what they could have done in this watering hole, but I didn't care. I'd be dead by sunset if I didn't get hydrated. I sucked down the water as if I would never get a chance to drink again, but I pulled up seconds later because my stomach was about to pop. I sat there for a long while savoring the best-tasting water I'd ever had. I didn't care if it was tepid and a bit murky near the shore where I drank. I pretended there were no germs whatsoever and that I'd be just fine. Then my stomach started to feel a little nauseous, and I figured I drank too much too quickly. I groaned with annoyance, but then I noticed the water shift in front of me. It started to rise up in one spot. It kind of looked like a log was in the water. Or it looked like a bunch of rocks in the shape of a log. It actually looked like the head of a massive crocodile.
Fuck me!
I slide-scooted up the bank and slipped on the mud like I was in one of those awful slasher flicks. I saw the teeth first. The gigantic snout was bristling with grimy white mountains of ivory. It wasn't one knife coming at me, but hundreds of them in a row that just wouldn't end. At the top of the snout were the malevolent eyes. Though they were underwater, I knew they were singularly focused on me. I continued up the slope on my butt as the creature exploded from below the surface and threw itself at me on the shore. I didn't even know how big it was because most of it remained in the water. The head was gigantic, and I could probably lie down comfortably in its maw. It had missed me on its first lunge, and then it kind of waited at the water's edge as if debating if I was worth more effort. By some miracle, I managed to get a hand on my spear, though it felt like it had shrunk by half in the face of the record-breaking huge crocodile coming for me. I continued scooting backward. The croc called out, unlike anything I'd ever heard. It had a deep, mechanical-sounding bellow, kind of like a souped-up hot rod engine left on idle. I felt it in my lungs, and I shook despite the heat. Its nostrils flared, and the top half of its jaw lifted a little when it roared. It was like a hot rod driver was stomping on the gas, and every muscle in my body seized up with terror as the monster shot all the way out of the water and raced toward me. He was about the size of old Gus. The best I could do with my spear under extreme pressure was kind of toss it in the direction of the monster. My throw missed, and the giant dino crocodile raced up the slippery bank without even noticing my counterattack. I figured I was going to die. I recoiled and shielded my head in what was going to be a futile final act, but I caught motion from my right. Some kind of animal slammed into the side of the croc's head and diverted it away from me. I had a precious few seconds and took advantage by continuing to scramble back to the safety of the tree line a dozen feet behind me. In that time, the new attacker had repeatedly stabbed the thing's left eye until it was a pulpy mess. My savior was a woman with a mane of long blonde hair, and she fell over as the lizard's maw snapped at her. The oversized crocodile emerged fully from the water, and I could see its impressive length. It would fit inside the back of a tractor trailer, but wouldn't have much room to spare. The monster had a patchwork of brown, green, and yellow scales all over its back. As all 30 feet of the behemoth chased the woman into the reeds, I got to see how it kind of blended into them. Though I was covered in mud and highly delirious from my lack of water, I ran to grab my weapon. I wanted to help the woman, but just as I got to my feet on the slippery shore, the angry croc roared and came back out of the reeds. The warrior woman screamed furiously while she rode the monster's back, and she worked her spear like a butter churn into the head of the gigantic lizard. I fully expected it to roll over to throw her off, but it simply wiggled itself my way and tried to escape into the open water. Even in those 5 seconds, the woman, who looked as if she dressed like a cheetah, pumped that spear deeper and deeper into the brain pan. She let out a scream each time she slammed down with her javelin, and each of her strikes was rewarded with a spray of bright crimson blood. A few feet before the monster reached the pond, it sank to the sand on the shore, and then slid a little down the mud bank with a melancholy groan. Then it rested in silence with one scaled front foot in the water. I could barely stand, despite the adrenaline rush, but managed to keep myself upright long enough to watch her yank the spear from her kill, swish it in the water, and then dismount onto the bank in front of me. She turned toward me, and I felt my heart threaten to slam through the ribs in my chest. My savior wasn't wearing much for clothes, just a small piece of colorless cloth tied around her hips. It looked as if the garment might have once been a bikini bottom, but it was torn and ripped in over a dozen places, and it was one tug away from disintegrating. She had the physique of one of those fitness models found on health magazine covers. She rocked a lean body with just the right amount of muscles, washboard abs, feminine arms, and breasts that looked almost fake since they were so perfectly proportioned. She had another thin piece of gray cloth tied around her chest, and her nipples pushed against the soft material with a distracting urgency. She partly turned around to look at her kill, giving me another chance to gawk and try to classify her. She wasn't human, but her frame was pretty much a duplicate of one. My savior seemed to be some kind of catwoman. A super-thin coat of blonde fur came out of her skin and poked through the holes of her two raggedy bits of clothing. The fur looked soft and luxurious, but she had thicker patches of dark fur on her shoulders and forearms. It was only blemished by the mud and grime she'd picked up from fighting the croc. As I looked at the spear she used, I noticed that her fingers ended in cat-like claws. Her hair was almost like a horse's mane. It was a bit lighter hue of blonde than her fur, and it came down past her tight butt with a heavy wave. I knew cats. The woman was as far from a cheetah as I was from a tabby, but the fur and spots on her shoulders gave me that impression. I was absolutely sure she'd been following me, and I wondered if she intended to kill me now. I could think of a lot worse ways to die. I got one last look at her taut ass before she turned to study me. Her face was a heart shape and as beautiful as the rest of her body. Her facial features were almost human, except that her eyes were big, golden, and had an elliptical iris. She also had the light coat of fur on her face, but somehow it made her look even more attractive.
"You are welcome," she said with a nod.
But I was still a bit dumbfounded by how good-looking she was. The giant crocodile that had almost eaten me, and how efficiently she'd killed the beast.
"You do not speak?" she asked,
and her perfect lips frowned with disappointment. She breathed with a little exertion from her fight. "Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, I can speak. Thank you," I said as I gestured to the now dead crocodile and tried to pretend that my legs weren't trembling.
"We have a camp," she said.
Her frown had left when I spoke, but she wasn't exactly smiling. "A camp?" I asked like an idiot. Damn, she was all sorts of distracting. Her voice was husky and had a strange accent that sounded almost Australian, but yet not. She kind of growled as she studied me. I may have been dehydrated, and she may have been an alien catwoman, but it seemed that she was starting to think I was an idiot.
I would like to go with you to your camp, yes."
My words probably weren't helping her think I was intelligent, but my head was really starting to spin again.
"Wait, you said we? Are there more of you?"
"Yes. I have two female companions. We are camped in a cave 1.5 miles in that direction."
She pointed off to the side with a spear, but I found myself focusing on her abs and the lower area of her stomach right above her torn and almost non-existent bikini bottom. I could spend a solid week licking chocolate off those abs.
"Do they both look like you?"
I forced my eyes up to meet hers with a great deal of effort.
"No, they do not,"
she said as her golden eyes narrowed a bit.
"I followed you through the jungle. You are weak and lack basic survival skills, but we are stronger together than apart."
I guess I'll come with you,"
I said.
But then the world spun, and I felt the hot sand on my face. Then I felt nothing but the cold embrace of darkness. Chapter 4. I don't remember what happened after I blacked out, but I came to when someone dropped me down next to a small crackling fire inside a cave.
You are safe. Rest.
The sexy, Australian-accented, cat-like woman spoke next to my ear.
What have you brought us, Sheila?
Another woman's voice asked from elsewhere in the cave, and I heard a clicking sound move toward me.
A man. Ah, is that the best you could find today? I'd rather have some meat.
The new woman's voice was beyond disappointed, and I tried to crack my heavy eyelids open so I could see her. The firelight hurt my eyes, though, and I had to close them again.
He is a man, yes, Trill,
said the woman who had saved me, and I now knew her name as Sheila. The woman I figured was named Trell made more clicking sounds.
And you know men are useless? Each and every one I have met is a complete waste of space and oxygen. They are slaves to their penises.
No, that's horrible. We can't have slaves around our hearth.
A bubbly female voice interrupted the other two from another part of the cave. Trell's voice huffed.
I didn't intend it literally. I mean that they are useless and must be told what to do all the time. They are worse than children and are only good for one.
Oh, I see. Well, this one's in uniform. He can protect us.
The bubbly woman replied.
Ha! If Sheila had to drag him...
Trell tried to say.
Enough for now, Sheila countered. I followed him for a few hours. He's not skilled in survival, but this world is harsh, and we need all the help we can get.
After more clicking noises and the complaining, the one named Trell spoke again.
I'm telling you now, the best thing to do with this man is to kill and eat him.
Yuck. You're so gross, the third voice replied.
Eat me? Where am I?
I said, though it was little more than a whisper.
Did he speak?
The upbeat woman asked with surprise. Yeah, I spoke. Why would you eat me? I said with a stronger voice. I was still tired from my journey, the restless night and the sharp bursts of fear each time I thought I heard those feathered dinosaurs chirp, but the drink of lake water seemed to have brought me back from the edge of delirium. My tunnel vision was gone, and I could think straight again. I pushed myself off my stomach, rolled to my side, and made it into a half-kneeling crouch. The fire was inside a ring of big rocks, and a large clay pot sat next to a modest bloom of flames. The aroma reminded me of my mom pulling a big turkey out of the oven on Thanksgiving, and my empty stomach grumbled to remind me the food gauge was on empty. My eyes adjusted to the low light of the cave and the jagged gray rock all around us. We were in a chamber about the size of my parents' three-car garage. The smallish exit across the rough floor to my right and the fire to my left provided enough light to finally see my rescuer. I thanked God she wasn't a figment of my water-deprived imagination.
Trell is joking. It is nice to see you awake. I am called Sheila. Here, drink some water before you answer our questions.
The feline woman nodded as she crouched, dipped a little clay cup into a pot, and then handed it to me. I downed it in several massive gulps and felt a bit disappointed it was only half full. She was just as gorgeous as when I first encountered her, like a fitness trainer and Amazon warrior rolled into one package while wearing a torn bikini. My eyes peeked down the taut muscles and firm curves of her amazing body. But I didn't want to start drooling, so I willed them up to her face so that I could study her alien perfection. Her blonde hair fell to the side of her head and playfully obscured her left cat-looking eye. She wore my hat on her head, and I forced myself to focus on it since my eyes kept trying to check out her body again. Damn! I'd seen plenty of beautiful women during my short life in Southern California, but Sheila was making my head spin. Or maybe it was because of the dehydration?
You're, wearing my hat,
I said. I was quite attached to the wide-brimmed leather hat, but she did look damn good wearing it. Nope, it wasn't the dehydration that was causing my head to spin. She looked amazing wearing anything. Or nothing.
It would not stay on your head as we walked back to camp, so I put it on my own for safekeeping.
She said unapologetically, but she didn't move to return it. Every ounce of me wanted to say Sheila could wear it forever, but she soon realized that I wanted it back, so the furry woman took it off her blonde head and handed it to me. Her hair left a scent on the leather, and I was able to smell it when I put the hat back on. Sheila stood up, took her long mane of blonde hair, and then ran her clawed fingers down its length. The movement probably wasn't meant to be sensual, but it reminded me way too much of the videos I'd seen of models standing in the shower. I stood and appreciated that Sheila was a bit taller than me, just like a true Amazonian warrior. I looked away and searched the shadows of the cave for the other women I had heard speak. Do you three girls live here?
You think we're girls? Ugh, you are such an idiot.
Trell's angry voice echoed from just behind Sheila, as if she'd been waiting for her important moment. She then stepped out from behind the feline woman, and any notion of the word girl vanished in the light of the fire. Her face was heavenly, but there was also something more sinister in her features. Her black eyes seemed to burn red as they sat under regal arched eyebrows. The sharp points of her ears probed from her lustrous black locks, and her red lips were dark and inviting at the same time. Her neck was tall and thin like a runway model's, caressed by black hair on both sides and a hefty choker necklace of polished black stones pressed against her marble-white skin. Large black hoop earrings hung from her ears, and I saw that the bands of dark stone were highlighted by thinly spun webs of glittering gold metal. She wore a white silk dress with accents of metallic gold that might have come from the treasury of an Egyptian princess. It hung from thin strands over her shoulders and flowed down to her feet. In many places the fabric clung to her skin as if it were painted on, and the sweat of her body soaked through until it was practically see-through. The neckline plunged way down below her cleavage and highlighted every detail of her pert breasts. A narrow band of gold looped around her flat stomach, and the glittering accessory drew my attention to her Victoria's Secret's angel model hip-to-waist ratio. Her airy dress hung off her body below her hips, but the silk fabric was sheer, and I was able to see her long legs flow down to perfect calves and little gold-encrusted sandals wrapped around high-arched feet. The dark-haired woman laughed as she took a final step into the light.
I am a woman. I have hundreds of thousands of males on my planet begging for the chance to inseminate me. Don't you see this delightful body?
Trell asked as she ran her hands down the sides of her stomach, hips, and thighs. Her fingers were unusually long, thin, and black. They almost looked like they were just bones, but it had to be the light doing weird things.
You called us girls. Perhaps we should address you as boy. Would you prefer that?
I stood about a head taller, so my line of sight went right to the beads of glistening sweat gathered in her cleavage. Her hands were now on her hips, as if she were losing her patience with me. Something was definitely off about her fingers, but I was distracted by the rest of her body and couldn't really figure out where I should keep my eye so that I didn't offend the strikingly beautiful woman. I swallowed hard, thankful for once I wasn't dying of thirst. My heart pounded fiercely, and my profuse sweating wasn't just because it was hot and muggy. I was about to reply when I finally looked behind her. Oh. My. Fucking. God. Trell had wings. They were dark in color, and the dim light from the fire wasn't letting me see all their details, but it looked as if they folded behind her back like the wings of a succubus. Earlier she mentioned slaves and killing me, which sounded like something a demon from hell would say. At least those from my video games. No wonder she oozed sexuality.
No words. That is a typical male response when I flaunt my perfection.
Trell's voice was haughty, and I knew my face was red from embarrassment and a newfound fear.
She spread her wings wide apart to display what they really were, and I let out a gasp of shock. What I thought was a wing was actually three legs folded neatly behind her.